Okay, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's actually a great pleasure to be experimentalist of the week. It never happened to me before. This is a fantastic feeling. And I will talk about a few new topics. And actually, I realized last week that everything I will speak about is not published. So in other words, nothing that I will show is published. In other words, you have to ask questions because you cannot find it anywhere else than just asking me. I usually introduce ICFO because not everybody may know, but probably this audience may know ICFO. It's an institute in Barcelona, close south of Barcelona, a very, very beautiful setting. Looks very similar to Santa Barbara, except that we don't have the lagoon, but we have mountains here. And the institute is very young, exists since about 10 years, but only 5 years ago we moved to Castelldefels, south of Barcelona, and since then started to grow rapidly to a size of about 20 groups right now, and expanding to about 25 groups in about 2 years. There's a new building, and there's still about 4 or 5 groups that have to be filled in. So if you know any excellent scientist that will be a future Nobel Prize winner, we will consider this person to fill up this last few spots. And the type of research that ICFO is mostly focused on light, but in a very broad sense, okay? So it's not just related to photonics, but also optoelectronics and graphene is being studied at ICFO. There are 4 key research areas, very fundamental studies on quantum effects in atomic systems and quantum optics from theoretical point of view, as well as more applied studies in biophotonics, and something in between is nanophotonics, metallic plasmonics, and since recently also graphene photonics and nonlinear optics. But I would say that most research groups are always in a mix of these 4 research areas. So graphene research at ICFO started about 1.5 years ago when I came to ICFO as a group leader, and we are studying plasmonics, nano-optics, photodetectors, carrier dynamics, basically anything that happens when a photon interacts with the graphene. 2 more applied groups are working on optoelectronics and graphene photodetectors, and here at the bottom, which you may not even be able to see, is that true? Can you see this?
Sufficient.
What's written here, graphene? Okay. Derek Chang works on quantum optics in graphene. Very interesting ideas we have here to study quantum effects in graphene using photons. These results are not published yet, or even far from experimentally realized. But next workshop. Here I will be able to speak about that. Do I have to introduce graphene to anybody here? No? Okay, good. Move on. So combining, what I would like to say here is that combining the electronic properties and optical properties of graphene is extremely promising for a wide range of applications, which you all have seen, photodetection, transparent electrodes, modulators, etc. And these all take place in a micron scale regime, or even millimeter regime, where photons, which are large, which are on the scale of about 1 micron, that's about the wavelength of light, interact with graphene. But if we pull optics down to the nanoscale,
and we look at
flexible phone. You don't have one?
It's made of graphene?
Yes, apparently the touch screen is made out of graphene. Actually, Stefan sent this to me, so you should answer this question. Where is it?
No, they have. This is time to answer this. They have a prototype with graphene, but this is. I think this eventually it's made of organic materials. I'm not sure. The one that we sell this year is has some graphene inside, but they are prototype.
So the point I wanted to make here is that light-graphene interactions are based on a large scale. And what I want to discuss is nanoscale interactions between light and graphene. And a scale which is far below the wavelength, at a scale of a few nanometers, the interaction between matter and graphene enters a fundamentally new regime where a new wealth of applications emerges, as well as fundamental phenomena that I will discuss during this talk. And I will both present applications and fundamentally new phenomena that are interesting from a theoretical point of view. The general type of interaction I will discuss is a emitter, which can have, you can see there's a dipole, which you can excite and create an electron hole pair, which is very close to the graphene. Nanometer scale, 10 nanometers away, 20 nanometers away, and the energy transfer mechanism can materialize in different forms. One of the energy transfer mechanisms is that the excited state here relaxes by what is called non-radiative energy transfer. So instead of emitting a photon, the energy will go into the graphene. This is for undoped graphene. When I dope graphene, the energy will also go to the graphene, but will launch plasmons, which are optical fields that propagate inside the graphene sheet. And have, in the case of graphene, also very interesting properties compared to metallic plasmonics. And the last type of interaction is still based on the same system, but here we engineered a conduction channel between emitter and graphene, and actually a charge can transfer into the graphene. Either the hole or the electron can be transferred to the graphene, and as I will show you, this can lead to a very efficient a novel type of photodetector, which is directly applicable for industrial applications. So let's start with the non-radiative energy transfer. It's also called FRET, fluorescent resonance energy transfer. It's also called quenching, which means I put an emitter close to a metal or to graphene, and it doesn't shine light anymore because the energy goes into the graphene. Why is this interesting? Several theoretical papers have addressed this this issue, and I will just give a very brief overview of the result. If I place an emitter close to a metal, I will see a change in lifetime. That's this curve. And I can quantify this in terms of a rate. That means the amount of photons it can transfer into the material system. In this case, for this curve, it's a metal. And the rate normalized over the normal emission rate is shown in this curve. Okay?
Like a stupid question.
Yes.
If you put an emitter, why doesn't it emit in all directions? Or do you have some mirror?
Yeah.
Or you just have collecting efficiency of something?
Right. So you can just see it like this. Let's take an emitter. We'll emit in all directions. Okay, this is one channel. And the rate is gamma zero. Okay, so units 1/s. Then I put something else close by, a piece of material. And there's another channel, which is gamma NR. Okay? And in some cases, this channel can be extremely efficient An analogous is much larger than the other channel.
Okay, so and then you just get connection efficiency of whatever 99%.
Exactly, yeah, and that's how the quenching appears. So usually this is just observed as a quenching effect, and the emitter becomes dark. And as I will show you, this is very important for biosensing. And what is important here is that graphene is actually an interesting material to take advantage of this quenching, because the effect is much larger. There's this blue curve is many orders of magnitude stronger than putting an emitter close to a metal, which is kind of surprising because it's two-dimensional. It's a thinner metal effectively, but the effect is much stronger. And in order to understand this curve, there's two factors important. This decay curve, the scale, so distance to the fourth compared to distance to the third. And because K0, which is the inverse of the wavelength, this product is a very small number. It's something like 0.01. Okay, so 0.01 to the fourth and the inverse is a very large number. So that's why this fourth power here becomes a very large number compared to the third power. So the two-dimensional character of the graphene enhances the quenching and energy transfer.
You are comparing there with a metal that is three-dimensional.
Yes. Yes. So there's two aspects. First of all, the graphene is two-dimensional. This gives a d to the fourth. The graphene also has linear dispersion, and due to this effect, the fine structure constant appears in this equation. So the alpha here, the fine structure constant, is unique for graphene. The d to the fourth is unique because it's two-dimensional.
So it's the true fine structure constant or the graphene fine structure constant?
But no, the true fine structure constant. So it's similar to the optical absorption, which scales at pi times.
Then this power law is not supposed to be due to the linear dispersion relation, I would say.
Exactly. The d to the fourth is because it's a two-dimensional conductor, okay. And the fine structure constant is related to the graphene dispersion.
So the particular dispersion relation does not enter in here. If you had, for example, bilayer graphene, you would expect more or less the same thing, right?
At these energies, it's bilayer is still linear. So
the thing is that the factors proportional to the Fermi velocity cancel out for the afferent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the same alpha which enters in transparency.
Yeah, so that's why I want to show this. This is quite interesting. That this fine structure constant comes back in many different ways. So not only light interacting with the graphene, but also near field interactions of emitters, which are close to the graphene.
So then why metal is worse? Because metal can absorb the whole thing.
By making it two-dimensional, you actually enhance the optical density of states. You can see here at the bottom, for metal you have to integrate over many dipoles. And you have to integrate this over three dimensions. And for graphene, the effective virtual dipoles are like squeezed in the two dimensions. So effectively, the optical density of states is larger. We can discuss this later. It's an interesting aspect. So this has been theoretically predicted, and we wanted to show this experimentally. And we were inspired by these measurements from Columbia University, where they saw quenching of single quantum dots on graphene. And in our case, we deposit a film of molecules on top of the graphene, in this case dye molecules, monolayer of molecules, and we look at the fluorescence. So what we see here in the fluorescence is strong emission for emitters that are not on the graphene, and very strong quenching for the emitters that are on the graphene. Okay, so the blue means it's basically emitting no photons. And in order to study this quenching effect in detail, it's not useful to just look at fluorescence because it's zero, okay? So I don't learn anything. So what we do is measure lifetimes. It's time-resolved measurement, which means I excite with a laser pulse my emitter, and wait and look until the photon comes out. Okay, so I can see time-resolved the decay time of the emitters. And what I observe is a slow decay time of about 4 nanoseconds for molecules that don't interact with the graphene, and a really fast decay time of 100 picoseconds for emitters that are 8 nanometers from the graphene. And this is remarkable, because if I put an emitter 8 nanometers away from a metal, I would not see any change. There's very, very strong interactions with the graphene. And if you work out this distance dependence in more detail experimentally, we find these circles, which agree pretty well with the theory. So there's extensive work on the biosensing application.
One other detail is for undoped graphene?
Yes, completely undoped graphene. It changes when you dope it.
So maybe it's because you're treating metal as just to compare graphene metal.
Yes.
I guess you assume that it's a perfect metal, right, or something?
No, the metal, it's actually, you actually extract it from the imaginary part of epsilon. But for undoped graphene, this imaginary part is very large. Yes.
Right. So there is no real part of, there's no any absorption.
Well, there's a losses, right? For a metal, there's losses as well, but it's just that's just the losses.
Right. So if I put Drude losses there, your epsilon will be imaginary. You'll have some imaginary part.
Yes.
So that's this. But if it's a perfect metal,
okay, then there would be
epsilon is pure real.
Yes. Yeah. You would not see anything.
And then it's easy to understand why metal doesn't
come.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no absorption in it.
Yeah.
No.
What?
Whereas in graphene, we also have this square range connectivity.
Yes.
So then, if you have a metal, then a more complicated model of metal, real metal,
mm-hmm. Which is in principle included in the epsilon, right? This is actually for gold. So I took the epsilon for gold, which includes interband scattering as well. For visible frequencies, interband scattering for gold is also present. But yeah, for graphene, this is now much stronger also because it's undoped, and so there's many excitations available.
What is the frequency?
We have done it for 600 nanometers and for 1 micron.
So you say it's for undoped, then you don't get any difference if you put bilayer?
We don't have experimental data, but what I would expect is that this shifts by a factor of 2. Because the conductivity changes a factor of 2.
So if you dope it, you have the same power law, but in another prefactor, or what happens?
At some point, the power law will also change because you start to launch plasmons. I will come to that. So basically, it is a power law for this process. For strongly doped, you launch plasmons, and then it's an exponential decay.
So at some level, just ohmic losses, right? So the emitter,
yes,
which creates oscillating like a field, and this field just... Whereas in the metal, if epsilon is perfect metal, epsilon would be...
real, so it's just inertial. That's correct. So the fact that this curve extends to a scale of 20-30 nanometers is really important for these studies on biosensing, where they measure the fluorescence of a molecule, a biomolecule, which is placed close to the graphene. And based on the strength of this fluorescence quenching, they can say something about the binding mechanism to the graphene and the distance. Yeah, so there's already a lot of work on this biosensing, but nobody has really worked out the details of this distance dependence. So that this was the motivation for this work, to actually show that the quenching extends over a very large distance, that it scales with d to the fourth, and also the appearance of the fine structure constant in the quenching mechanism. If there are no more questions, I will go to the next topic, which is related to electron transfer of similar kind of emitters, in this case quantum dots, which can be used for very sensitive photodetection. And the motivation to use graphene photodetection was initially boosted by the prospect of doing ultra-fast and broadband photodetection. Ultra-fast because of the high mobility, broadband because there's no band gap. And this was demonstrated by IBM and many other groups. And the downside of these detectors is the low absorption of light in graphene, which gives a relatively low responsivity. For communication purposes, this is no problem, but for video imaging applications like night viewers, this responsivity is on the low side. Another aspect of the existing photodetectors is that the gain is smaller than one, which means one photon can not generate more than one charge. Here I want to present an alternative photodetector which is based on a hybrid device where quantum dots are coupled to the graphene, and by taking advantage of charge transfer we find very high responsivity of about 10 orders of magnitude larger, and this is also associated to a gain of about 100 million related to the strong absorption in quantum dots and the charge transfer mechanism. So this is the device, a strip of graphene. On top of this, we deposit quantum dots, and through a linker molecule, holes can transfer from the quantum dots to the graphene. And here you can see a typical absorption spectrum of these quantum dots. They absorb up to infrared light, up to 1.5 micron. So when we shine light on this device, we can see it's responsive over the entire area, which is already different than typical graphene photodetectors, which are only sensitive at the contact. Here it's strong in the middle. And a closer inspection of this detector is revealed by measuring Dirac peak, which we all know very well. This is a Dirac peak with the lights off. When we turn the light on, we can see the Dirac peak shifting. And this shift is actually very strong. If you plot the shift of the peak as a function of power, then there's a very strong shift for powers that are in a femtowatt range. Okay, and to get a feeling for a femtowatt, that's about 1,000 photons per second. Okay, so it's very low power. Basically, complete darkness will still generate a few thousand photons, which we can detect. So this is an extremely sensitive detector, which can be quantified in terms of responsivity. And these numbers are competing with existing technologies such as indium arsenide, with the advantage that this can be integrated with silicon and CMOS technologies. So the mechanism is can be captured in a basic picture. So if we connect quantum dots to graphene, there will be a work function mismatch which generates an internal field which will transfer holes to the graphene, and electrons will be captured in the quantum dot. Okay? So if I shine a photon or a couple of photons, I will basically trap electrons in the quantum dots, which are very close to the graphene, and due to the photogating effect, this will induce a doping, a positive hole doping in the graphene. Okay, so you can also see it in this image. So what we effectively create is a local, is a top gate, a local top gate, which is extremely well coupled to the graphene. And we can activate this gate just by shining light.
What do you need to control the band gate?
I don't fully understand. If you don't put quantum dot, then there's no photo gate.
Metal graphene jumper.
No, because then you will not. You need a semiconductor to trap one of the two carriers. This is a trapping mechanism. So in a metal, I will immediately lose my carriers. I need an optically active material where I generate electrons and holes and sweep out one of the two and store the other.
Why is it important to have a dot?
Yeah, so the quantum dots are very good light absorbers. And they can be functionalized with these linker molecules to transfer the charge. And this is more difficult to achieve with the built material. But I'm not excluding that this is possible with built material. In terms of chemistry, this is something we had under control. So we could make this quickly. But maybe this works with built material as well. So the gain can be seen in the following way. As long as an electron is stuck in the quantum dot, a hole, I will show this animation again, a hole will be recycled due to charge conservation. So the hole will actually not disappear in a drain, but another hole will come in through the source. So the gain is defined by the ratio of lifetimes between electron in the quantum dot and hole in the graphene. And that's why I can get a gain that's so large. You can also quantify this. You can write down the shift of the Dirac peak based on change in carrier density induced by the light. Or you can quantify the gain in terms of lifetimes, and you'll find exactly the same formula. And it's basically the same physics. And in both cases, we'll find something like 10 to the 8. Oh, this is the mobility. Yeah, so it's just any, so the mobility in these devices was about 1,000. So we can improve at least a factor of 10 in the new. We can also apply a factor of 10 larger bias. So we do expect that we will be able to detect single photons at room temperature.
The shifting that the arc point is from the electric field of the charges in the quantum.
Exactly. Yeah. So the exactly. So it's like a gate. So it's photo induced.
These electrons just stay there.
They stay there for about 1 second, which is what we measure. So if you turn the laser off, you actually see a decay time, which is the relaxation time of the electrons. Which is also a problem because this will slow down the device. But what is really nice for graphene is that you can tune the Fermi energy, so you can actually play with this work function mismatch. So we can actually change the bands just by applying a voltage to the back gate and pull the electrons out of the quantum dot. So we implemented a reset function, where we could speed up the device from about 1 second to about 10 milliseconds, which is sufficient for video imaging applications.
Okay.
Okay, and I've shown you these quantum dots can be designed to absorb invisible or infrared. It's very promising for video imaging and infrared, for example, for night viewers. Oh, which is, I don't have this image here. For night viewers, which have been, which will become very important, for example, for the car industry in the future. Like all cars are expected to have a night viewer in about 10 years. And there's not really a cheap alternative at this point. So graphene, I do believe that graphene will be a very strong alternative to make a cheap and CMOS compatible night viewers. So the third part of my talk I will speak about this most of the time is the excitation of surface plasmons in graphene, which has been discussed extensively in the literature. And they have been observed in several experiments using electron scattering, but never it was possible to really spatially resolve graphene plasmons, and in particular to show the propagation of plasmons. So these plasmons are basically optical fields that are coupled to electronic excitations in the graphene, and the properties are remarkable due to graphene linear dispersion and two-dimensionality, which gives rise to very strong field confinement of optical fields and gauge tunability of these optical fields. You can change the wavelength, you can switch it on or off. And due to the high mobility of graphene and the crystallinity, it's expected that the propagation will be relatively long. So at a very basic level, the plasmonic properties can be derived from purely the conductivity function. And this is discussed in, also by many, in many publications already. And can be summarized by two terms, the intraband scattering, which is Drüdem scattering, well known from metallic behavior, and interband scattering, which is much stronger for graphene, but this can be suppressed by inducing doping. Okay, so the interband scattering is this step function, and by introducing doping, this will shift to the right, and this gives me an operation regime here, where the real part of the conductivity is almost zero. And in that regime, the permittivity becomes negative, which gives me a metallic behavior where surface plasmons are supposed to be longer lived and propagate. So the dispersion of these plasmons is shown over here. The energy scales with the square root of the momentum. It follows this dispersion relation here. K is proportional to omega squared. The E squared of H appears because of the conductivity, which is proportional to E squared of H. So to plug in some numbers to give you a feeling for these plasmons and also how remarkable they are, let's have a comparison between graphene light and silver. Okay. This is the wavelength in air. On the horizontal axis, the vertical axis is the plasmon wavelength. And for light, okay, this is a straight line. And for a metal, the plasmon wavelength is actually slightly shorter than for light. A film of metal will reduce the group velocity in confined light a little bit, but actually the effect is small. So in order to do metallic plasmonics, people make these structures smaller in order to gain advantage. And in the case of graphene, this is dramatically different. And as you can see, the wavelength is extremely short. This is a zoom. For example, 2000 nanometers of light can generate plasmons that are only 25 nanometers in wavelength. This you can capture a very simple formula, oops, which I would call compression factor. So I take light, large wavelength, make it small, the wavelength called lambda sp. So normalize this over the wavelength in free space, I get something that's proportional again to the fine structure constant and this dimensionless parameter, Fermi energy over the plasma energy. So this is interesting. So the fine structure constant appears again also in the plasmonic properties. And actually the plasmon wavelength is about 100 times shorter simply because the fine structure constant has this value. Because these plasmons are so short in wavelength, it means the momentum is large. It's very difficult to excite plasmons just with light, okay? Because momentum of light is tiny compared to momentum of a graphene plasmon. So what you need to do is put a dipole close to the graphene in order to create enough momentum, sufficient momentum to launch these plasmons. And this is an animation of a dipole which comes closer and closer to the graphene. And when it's close enough, it will launch these plasmons that propagate in the surface of the graphene sheet. In reality, it will be very difficult to take a dipole and put it close to the graphene and move it around. So what we do is we use a metallic AFM tip and use this as an effective dipole. So by shining light on a tip which has a radius of about 20 nanometers, we create a very large distribution of momenta, and the momenta is hopefully large enough to launch a plasmon. So this was, I have to go back. This has been the technique of coupling to plasmons using metallic AFM tip has been, okay, now I have to wait till this animation is finished.
Can you say again, so what is special about graphene now for you? Mm-hmm. It's just two-dimensional character or more?
Short plasmon wavelength.
Which is now due to what? So what exactly characteristics?
Okay.
So you now evade from the... you now dope the graphene, yeah? Is it correct?
Uh-huh. Yes.
You can see the doped graphene, yeah? Which is already... sort of
good
two-dimensional metal, yeah?
Yes.
So now,
what is exactly special about graphene? Okay, let's go back.
Why is it different from silver?
The plasma wavelength in graphene is about 100 times shorter than the wavelength in air. So if you really want to use light for nanoscale operations, for example, to guide and manipulate light at a nanoscale, and to store light in very small volumes in order to boost light-matter interactions, you need to confine light to small volumes. And this is an entire field, the field of metallic plasmonics, and these people working already for 10 years to confine light to small volumes. And they usually use metals.
Yeah, no, that answers, okay. Since I'm not an expert, I just try to understand what exactly characteristic is different.
Right.
I don't know.
I think his question is, what is the difference between graphene, doped graphene, and a two-dimensional?
So there are two parameters. So what happens? So first of all, two-dimensional metal doesn't exist at room temperature. Okay. So this is just I have created a two-dimensional metal.
Okay.
So if I would make silver two-dimensional, this curve would go down, but it would not reach graphene. So there's a second aspect, which is the the linear dispersion and the tunable Fermi energy, which gives me even shorter plasmon wavelength.
so that the cost. Yes.
So you want the Fermi energy, you want to be away from the neutrality point, but not too far. Is it correct? That
yes. So you want to have the condition that the Fermi energy is larger than h bar omega, but not too far,
okay,
right?
I understand. Okay.
Because because if you make it larger, then lambda sp is larger. So for a metal, this number would actually be very large and not tunable, so this is still large.
Okay,
okay? And a graphene, I can tune it and optimize basically my optical field confinement. Yeah. So I really have the opportunity to push this curve down by two orders of magnitude.
What kind of Q distribution do you get in your momentum distribution?
With the metallic tip?
No, from the, yeah. The tip that you're using. Do you know what your Qs are and how peak it is?
Yes, this curve exists, but I don't remember the numbers by heart. I think you know actually. Do you know the numbers exactly? I mean, the momentum is like 1 over 20 nanometers, that's the average, but then there's a distribution. But how large, do you know by heart how large the distribution is?
That
depends on the shape of the tip. Yeah, right. Yeah. Just one over.
Live, right? Really helps you.
There are sharper tips. Oh, then, yeah, you can make. I'm sorry.
They're so sharper. They're very comparable, the two of you.
Yeah, the experiments are comparable, yeah. Yeah.
One can go to higher use K by using
Charmant. Yeah, right. I just wondered.
Yeah, but in principle, the K is large enough to launch the graphene plasmons. So you could win some signal to noise. But the goal here is not to efficiently launch plasmons, but just to make images. To launch plasmons more efficiently, there are better ways to do it. So in a group of Rainer Hillebrand and Nana Gunnar, this is a setup that has been developed already since a while, where the polarizability of a tip is used to study phonons and silicon carbide and also plasmons and metallic structures. But now we have also applied this to graphene. And in some sense, this is really the unique setup for this, because it allows you to study graphene plasmonics with infrared light, which has a wavelength which is very large, about 10 micron, and the features are only on a scale of about 100 nanometers. Okay? So we can really downscale the wavelength of light to nanoscale dimensions. Now I will show you the experiments which are based on graphene, which is exfoliated, all based on CVD graphene, which is etched into triangular structures, which you can see over here, and there's a zoom over here. So this is now a piece of exfoliated graphene. The graphene is here in this corner. That's what you see here, metallic contacts, and there's a triangular shape, which is basically a ribbon which starts with 1 micron wide and then tapers down to about 20 nanometers. So that's a three-dimensional cartoon of this ribbon, and here you can see the AFM image. So what we do now is we take a tip, bring it close to the graphene, we shine 10 micron light. Presumably, this will launch a plasmon which propagates towards the edge, will reflect back to the tip and scatter into a photon, and this is what we detect. Okay? So measuring this photon flux as a function of tip position will give you an image like this, where you can see these interference fringes here, which are the real space images of graphene plasmons. If you look from, you probably have seen already this these data from Dmitry Basov. which has been measured at the same time, and they see similar features close to edges or close to the tip of a triangle. It's all very much reproducible on different types of substrates. A close inspection of the data, as you can see here from the top, so the edge of the graphene is this dashed line. So we see very strong signal away from the edge, which you can also see in these cuts, these oscillations here, and there's a peak here which is a little bit away from the edge. Now basically what we observe is something that's equivalent to what you would get if you take an emitter close to a mirror. If I put an emitter close to a mirror, and I bring it closer and closer, it will be dark, brighter, dark, and brighter again. And the reason is that it will interfere with itself. So it emits light, reflects, and interferes with itself, which gives you this oscillation. And in other words, this tip is probing the optical density of states close to a mirror, which changes because of the presence of the mirror. In the case of graphene, I also have an effective dipole close to an edge. So here on this image here, there's the edge is here. When I move away from this edge, I will launch plasmons which reflect and interfere with itself. Okay, so this gives rise to these oscillations, which are separated by lambda over 2, because it's a standing wave. So this enables me to extract the plasmon wavelength in graphene, and maybe it's not visible here, but we find something about 300 nanometers, which is about 50 times shorter than the excitation wavelength, 10 microns. And this can be understood by this formula based on the fine structure constant and a ratio, Fermi energy and plasmon energy. Okay, so this is the factor of 137, and there's a factor of 4 here, so this gives me a factor of 50 reduction in wavelength. So the reason I brought up this self-interference effect and the optical density of states is that we can actually theoretically understand the data just by considering the optical density of states of the plasmons in graphene. If you calculate these, you'll find very striking similarity between theory and experiment. So we can reproduce these oscillations and the peaks at the edge. And we can also see this structure here at the end, at the tip. And these density of states are actually kind of interesting because if you look here at different widths, for different ribbons with different widths, you'll find all these modes, which are basically Fabry-Perot modes. And what we probe is the average over all the modes. So the local density of states is just an integral over all the modes that can exist in this ribbon. And on top of that, there's a very strong signal at the edges. You can see it here, 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 and here. But the reality, we don't probe this because of the distance between the tip and the graphene. We actually probe mostly the signal that's inside the graphene. Okay, because the signal at the edges is much stronger confined than the plasmons inside the graphene ribbon. So you can see here in the model, there's at the edge a very dim local density of states. But if you come closer, this is amplified stronger and stronger. And in the end, this is the dominant contribution. In the experiments, we don't observe this, so that's why we see the strongest signal actually away from the edge. So what you see here, the dashed line is away from the signal. So this can all be understood in the picture of the optical density of states.
those are scars that you have an experimental picture, is it because the edge is not?
Okay, let me show you another image which shows this more dramatically. We don't understand.
Because I'm wondering if this could be like one of these chaotic billiards, and you have like reflection of scars in the wave function.
Yeah, let me show you. Here you can see the same image in a different color scale. You can see indeed these oscillations. They're more or less regular. And this is graphene on silicon carbide. And this is graphene on silicon oxide. And you can actually see them again, these black dots. And they also change when you change the carrier density. And we have no clue what it is. So you think it's what? The chaotic
I was thinking about the other structures that you have. Away from the edges, not on the edges.
Ah, you mean like these?
Kind of scars.
Yeah. Ah, okay. These are, you can see these also in the AFM images. So the graphene on a silicon carbide has like locally wrinkles, which I believe happens when they cool down. When they cool down after the growth, this relaxes and forms locally these wrinkles. Yes, these here. Yeah, you can see them in an AFM. You see here, and this one is more clear. But what is really interesting, I think, is these oscillations at the edge, which we don't see in the AFM. And I think there's some interesting physics going on. But maybe it's an edge plasma mode, maybe it's related to the phonons, but we have no clue.
What happens if you lower the Fermi energy below the frequency of the light?
I will show you, yeah. Fine. So the features here at the end of the tip are kind of intriguing because they have very small length scale. They're smaller than 100 nanometers in scale. And we see these as well in the local density of states calculations. And if we quantify this, we look at the width of the ribbon where these modes appear, we find actually that's exactly, well, it's exactly 0.8 times lambda SP, the plasma wavelength, and lambda over 2. So these are very comparable to Fabry-Barreau modes.
Yeah. One question related to those oscillations. Oscillations are seen in the experiment, but not in the theory.
Oh, at the edge? Yeah. But I just showed you? Yeah, you can see it's not there.
Okay.
Let's see. Here? So here on the left side, you see these oscillations?
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, there's nothing there. But the theory also doesn't really include this dimension, right? It's calculated for a fixed width, right, which is infinite, and then we just put the theoretical curves together. So we could never see any features that change in this direction. So basically, we don't include any plasmons that have momentum in this direction.
Okay.
Yes.
The calculation has been done for this geometry. It's been done by for
a fixed ribbon, which is okay. infinitely long. Okay. Yes. So we need three-dimensional calculations in order to investigate this. But even then, if there's a mode that propagates along the edge, the question is where does it reflect, right? Maybe here, but then this would mean that the plasma actually propagates a very long distance and back to the tip, which may be possible, but it would be quite fascinating. That's the case.
What's the length for this fracture?
Oh, I should have a length scale on this. But I know by half or heel this year. So it's 10 micron long.
Yeah. You made it on purpose.
Yeah. Oh, in this case, it's carbide, so it's naturally grown. But we have also etched this for graphene on silicon oxide. Yeah, and there it's defined by etching. So, and in both cases, we see it, okay? And so these are naturally defined etches. And on the silicon oxide, they're etched by reactive ion etching. And in both cases, we see these oscillations. So I hope that at the end of the workshop, there will be an answer to this outstanding problem. Yeah.
This is doped graphene?
Yeah, so the Fermi energy is about, well, we extract the Fermi energy from the measurements about 0.3, 0.4 electron volts, which is quite high on silicon carbide that it's known to be high, but it's a bit higher than what is expected. Yeah, so these features at the end can be seen as resonant modes, where basically the edges confine a plasmon like in a cavity. Okay, so the distance between the mirrors, which is then the edges, is about lambda sp or lambda over 2. And what is interesting here is that you can indeed store light with a mode volume that's 1 millionth times smaller than lambda cube. So for quantum information, and for strong light-matter interactions, and for sensing, this is a very important parameter. Plasmonic people always talk about mode volumes that are about 100 times smaller than lambda cube. This is 1 million. So this is strong improvement compared to metallic plasmonics. Okay, so the damping, let me see, how am I with time? Because damping is an outstanding discussion, and I just want to say two brief things about it. If you look at these curves, you already see that the decay of these oscillations is strongly non-exponential. Yeah, you can actually see it clearly here. So if we look at the oscillations in the middle of the ribbon, a zoom is shown here, we find an exponential decay, and we can explain this decay with a mobility of about 1200 centimeters squared per volt second, which is roughly the mobility that we used in our devices. And this is purely a Drude damping, okay? So due to a scattering time tau, which matches the scattering time that you will find in DC measurements with a mobility of 1200. And then there's a strong non-exponential decay where the edge mode is very strong, and in the paper by Basov, this was explained by the shape of the tip and the fact that this is not a point dipole. So this, okay, so this is something I cannot say much more about. Their data seem to fit the theory really well. So I would expect that this decay is related to this. But then the question is indeed, like, what's the remaining decay? Is it indeed limited by the mobility, or is there something else going on? So we are currently investigating samples with higher mobility to see if there's a fundamental damping mechanism, or if there's an edge damping mechanism we don't understand. At this point, I would say our data are consistent with a damping mechanism that's related to the scattering time and consistent with the mobility of about 1,000, which is not a surprise, because at room temperature and air, a graphene flake on silicon carbide does not have very high mobility. So this is something else interesting we saw, which we we think we can explain. So you see here again. No. And we can. but Basov can, so maybe yeah, this would be interesting, yes. Yeah. So here you see the same triangle. Okay. But the only parameter that we change is the excitation wavelength by only about 10%, from 9,000 nanometers to 10,000. Okay? And you see a dramatic change in terms of this resonant cavity mode, which shifts to a much wider part of the ribbon. In other words, the plasmon wavelength is changing very strongly, and while the excitation wavelength changes weakly. So we cannot explain this with a simple dispersion relation with the omega proportional to the square root of k, but actually we need to include the phonons in the substrate in order to understand our experimental data. Okay, so this dispersion relation from the plasmons in graphene hybridize the phonons in the silicon carbide, which have two branches here and here. It gives rise to an anti-crossing. And related to this, this dispersion here is quite flat, which means I change the excitation energy by a small amount, and I get a large amount of change in momentum. Right, so this explains why we see this very strong change in plasmon wavelength. And we modeled this phenomenologically by including the permittivity of silicon carbide, including the phonons, which gives you a permittivity that has a strong resonance here. And from this we can extract the plasmon wavelength, which indeed matches the theoretical dispersion, including the phonons in the silicon carbide.
Basov also had phonons, right?
I'm sorry?
The experiment by Basov,
yes,
also saw hybridization with the phonons.
In the silicon oxide, yes. But I think it was shown in the spectroscopic measurements. So I don't think they saw it in the spatially resolved measurements. At least not in the publication, maybe you know better. Okay, but was not included. Okay, so you see the same type of behavior.
I don't know.
Okay. So yeah.
Did you measure also low frequencies where you have on the next slide?
Yes, we have measured a spectrum, which I don't have in this slide. And in the spectrum, you can see the plasmon mode. Then we see a gap. And then we see basically a continuum. But not, we don't really see the plasmon modes anymore. We just see it disappears, yes. Yeah. But we definitely see this gap. Yeah, plasmons don't exist. Okay, so this shift here can be theoretically understood, including the phonons, and which you can see over here. Now we come to the question, can we now use plasmons and graphene to control light with electric fields? This is a very important question for the photonics community, because light cannot be controlled by electric field, obviously, because the charge is zero. And actually, I found a PRL where they measured the lower bound on the charge at 10 to the minus 26. We need very large fields. Let's see if we can also do this with weak electric fields. The solution is to couple photons to electrons, which you can do in graphene. So our device here is on top of silicon and silicon oxide, which allows us to change the carrier density. And what we see is this. Okay, so this is again this triangle, and now this is etched. With reactive ion etching, we can see this cavity mode, And this cavity mode shifts to a ribbon a bit wider width for increasing voltages. Okay, so we increase the carrier density and we can see the plasma wavelength change, which can be understood by looking at the plasmon dispersion as a function of by gate voltage, and I plot it here as a function of Fermi energy normalized over the plasmon energy. So theoretically you would expect this dashed line, which is related to this formula which I showed you before, and in the middle here plasmons are damped by interband scattering, as you can see in this schematic. So we can extract the plasmon wavelength from this data. We find these red circles matches well the theory and this relation here.
But if you go below those Fermi energies, you go below H bar omega, what happens? The formula does not apply.
Yes. Nothing. So they fully disappear. So if you compare this to larger Fermi energies, you can really switch plasmon completely off. And what is interesting, if you think in terms of applications, there's actually a plasmon gap which is larger than zero. Okay. So here we could make a plasmon transistor which has an on-off ratio that's larger than 10 to the fourth or whatever optics people want to see. And we also measured this in more detail. So here this curve, is it visible? So basically we take a cut through this triangle and plot this as a function of gate voltage. Okay, so you can see this mode here in the red. Then you go to lower carrier densities, the mode changes, and at this point it disappears. And then it appears again. Okay. So the plasmons are based on n-type charge carriers here. Then there's a neutrality point where plasmons don't exist. And then plasmons based on p-type carriers. You can see a little bit of that.
Can you tell me on that top frame, you've got red circles and then you've got a dashed line. Is the dashed line just the theory?
Yes. So it's basically also this formula.
Yeah. Okay. And then the red ones are here.
So this formula is actually simplification. If you include the conductivity, including interband scattering, etc., you get a much more complicated expression. But I like to use this formula because it's simple and actually it matches the exact theory really well. Okay, so the blue color scale is the exact calculation, and the dashed line is valid up to this value 1, which is the ratio of Fermi energy over plasmon energy. Okay, below this, interband scattering will kick in. Yes.
When you gave this narrow structure, it's not a parallel plate capacitor.
Yeah.
So. Capacitance. You
would
need to model it. Is that what you do to get the curve?
Yeah, so we see about a factor of 2 stronger capacitive coupling. And if you just like estimate how much stronger it would get for a ribbon with this width, it does.
So in other words, there is some adjustable parameter in this.
Yes. There's one adjustable parameter which is the coupling to the back gate, and this we used as a fit parameter basically, but then we looked back if it makes sense, and it's a factor of 2 which makes sense. If you make a ribbon of about 100 nanometers in width with an oxide that's 300 nanometers away, you get a stronger charge accumulation effect. Yeah, it's hard, eh? We do transport measurements, but that's over a large area. And maybe Raman. But also Raman, you have a laser. Yeah, we have a laser spot that's much larger. So you need to do Raman with a tip, something like that.
Okay.
It just, yeah, that could be interesting to investigate that. Yeah. Okay, so here comes the part you don't understand, which we discussed. I think I'm out of my time, but I can go through this quickly. So in order to say something about the losses of plasmons and graphene, the simplest figure of merit you could give is just based on the propagation distance divided by the plasmon wavelength. In other words, how many wavelengths can I propagate? And from this dispersion relation, this is just omega tau, okay? So now the question is, what is tau? Is tau the same as measured DC measurement? Can we indeed plug in numbers that are typical for mobilities between 1,000 and 100,000, which are realistic? And if we compare these numbers to silver, we find that graphene is much better, okay? It's about 1 to 3 orders of magnitude better plasmonic material than silver, which is the best metallic plasmonic material that is out there. And this would lead to propagation distances between 10 and 1,000. But what we didn't include in this analysis is optical phonons, but they are expected only to kick in for frequencies above 0.2 electron volts. So for visible plasmonics, this may be an issue. Perhaps electron-electron interactions affect the scattering time, but this is currently under debate. And also substrate interactions will play a role. So from our experiments, I don't think we can say anything about these terms here, because our experiments do match this relationship. Mobility of 1,000 gives an omega tau gives an omega tau of 10. Okay. So if I plug in a mobility of 1,000 in the formula, I get propagation distance of a plasma wavelength of 10. Then today I learned that there's a factor of 2 pi that you have to include, 4 pi. Okay, so depending on the criterion you use, you have to put a 4 pi here. So then it's 1. What?
So the denominator or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's reduced by a factor of 4 pi. So the interesting question is, can we operate in infrared frequencies visible? For doping, it should be possible to dope to 1 electron volt, but it's not clear what happens to the mobility and also on plasmon scattering. So this is what we are currently investigating. And in addition, we're also looking into quantum effects for small graphene structures, where the light and matter interactions are extremely strong and would lead to quantum effects such as vacuum Rabi splittings. And we're also looking into light absorption, which is enhanced by plasmons and can actually lead to 100% absorption. So you can transform graphene from 2.3% absorber to 100% absorption by taking advantage of plasmons. And this is discussed in this PRL, which was recently published. So let me thank the people which I collaborated with for the experiments, for Rainer Hillebrand, Fernando Kuhner, for the measurements on the near-field scattering microscope to image graphene plasmons, Gerasimos Constantatos, who grows quantum dots we used for the photo detection, Javier Garcia Bajo from Madrid. He provided an extensive amount of theory and has also published a lot of theoretical papers on graphene plasmons. And materials were provided by Graphinea, CVD graphene, on copper transferred to silicon oxide, Philippe Corignon and Nicolas Camara made the silicon carbide devices. And the people in my group here, this photo is a bit old. My group is now almost two times larger because it's we exist since about 1.5 years, so we're strongly expanding. If you know any good students, please don't hesitate to contact me. We have a lot of interesting stuff to do, as you can see in my summary slide, which I will just leave you for to look at nice pictures. And with this, I want to thank you for your attention.